So the very first time I visited Chicago was in January of 2014. You know, I thought I knew what winter cold was, you know, growing up in the Bay Area. I grew up in Daly City, which is like, you know, basically the Philippines of the West Coast. We grew up in the fog all the time. It was gray. So I thought I knew what winter cold was like. But little did I know that Chicago cold just hits different. And that year in particular, Chicago experienced one of its coldest winters ever recorded. When I was there, it hit negative 40 wind chill. Negative 40 wind chill. Needless to say, I was severely ill-equipped for that weather, being a Bay Area boy. All I had on me was this cheap little H&M coat, a t-shirt, and a pair of jeans. And I'm trying to walk outside in Chicago winter, and literally 3 minutes in, I had to evacuate the street, go into the mall, and buy like four extra layers of cheap clothing because I almost died. Now, I was not prepared for the Chicago winter. If you don't know what winter looks like in Chicago, if you don't prepare for it, if you don't approach it with the reverence it deserves, you actually might die. Like, you will freeze to death. And you know, knowing what season you're in determines how you live, what you wear, what you do, what your posture is. You know, it would be foolish to dress in layers in Las Vegas during the summer and go out for a picnic. It would be foolish to go out for a picnic in the middle of June here in San Francisco because it's still pretty cold. You have to know what season you're in. Now, Scripture tells us there's a season for everything. One of the most famous passages about this is Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8, and that's our text for today. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Knowing what season you're in is important because, hear me, church, a misplaced or a misdiagnosed season will always lead to misplaced expectations. Let me say that again. A misdiagnosed season will always lead to misplaced expectations. I mentioned it earlier. It's funny because you always know who's from out of town by observing how people dress during summer here in San Francisco. Give me a second. All right, we back. I got it. Right, it's funny, you always know who's from out of town here in San Francisco during the summer because people have this expectation, oh, California summer, it's going to be so nice. I'm going to dress in my cute little summer outfit, grab some mimosas, grab some sandwiches, go out and have a picnic in Dolores Park in the middle of June and July. And if you've been here long enough, you'll know that actually it's still pretty cold in June and July here in San Francisco. If you've been here long enough, you know that San Francisco summers actually start at the end of August or early September, and it only lasts like a week or two. Remember, I think we hit it like a few weeks ago, right? It was really warm here in the city, but if you haven't been here, you don't know how to prepare for the season, for the weather that we are in. A misdiagnosed season will always lead to misplaced expectations. If you think you're in a season of fruitfulness, when God's actually placed you in a season of hiddenness, you're going to be wondering why nothing you do is working out. And it feels like you're working as hard as you can with very little yield or fruit. If you think you're in a season of fulfillment, where God's going to answer all your prayers and your promises, when God's actually placed you in a season where he wants to teach you waiting and trust, you're going to feel like God's not moving fast enough. You know, when we first started 99, we had certain expectations of how God would build this church. You know, we thought we'd do it like everyone else. We're going to assemble a team like the Avengers. We're going to pick a date, and then we're going to launch on that date. And then the people will come. Our congregation will grow. We'll record worship albums. We'll have fog machines and lights, reach the entire city, and then eventually the world. That's what we're going to do. That's the blueprint. But little did we know, when we started, we quickly began to realize that God was actually calling our entire community into a season of hiddenness. And so during that first year of our church, we had no church name, no branding, no website, no social media. People couldn't find us online unless you knew someone from our community. We met in this little office space on the second floor of a picture framing studio on 7th Street. Every time I pass it, I have fond memories because we were cramped in that tiny little room with no AC, and we were just worshiping our hearts out because that season, God had called us to be hidden. We realized that God wanted to use those first few years to plant deep roots in us, to teach us covenant community, to do the important work beneath the surface, to prune us. You know, I mentioned Jacob and Jamie. Jacob was our worship leader before he moved to SoCal last month or 2 months ago. And they had their wedding last weekend, which is why the church was completely empty if you were here last week. Everyone was down for the wedding. We were having a good time celebrating. And I realized that during that season of hiddenness, the fruit were a lot of the relationships at this wedding. That during that season where God kept us hidden, where God kept us underneath the soil, the fruit is now just beginning to be born. See, had we thought the season we were in was one of accelerated growth and fruitfulness, we would have been massively disappointed and discouraged. We would have felt like God lied to us, that he abandoned us. But we knew what season we were in. If you don't know what season you're in, you may be doing the exact opposite of what God has designed that specific season for. You may be working against the very thing that God is trying to do in you. Hear me, sure. Some of you are grinding and overworking when God has actually called you into a season of rest. Some of you are comfortable, way too comfortable and inactive when God has actually called you into a season of fire and fervency. Some of you are avoiding and numbing when God has actually called you into a season of mourning and grieving and facing your emotions. There's nothing more exhausting, nothing more discouraging than working against the season that God has put you in. Just like if you hate winter, you can't will spring to come. Like if I sat here and said, I don't want to go through fall this year. I don't want to go through winter. Skip it all. I want to go back to spring. I can't sit here and will the season to come. You just have to go through it. And sometimes we fight against nature. We fight against the season that God has put us in. And there's nothing more discouraging or exhausting than doing that. Right? If a farmer knows that the best time to plant tomatoes, which I learned this, is between April and July, it would be foolish for him to plant in November and expect a flourishing harvest. In the same way, God plants us in certain seasons to grow, but if we're not aware of what season we're in, we actually risk missing out on the growth and the fruitfulness God has for us in that season. Now, how we tie all this together, one of the ways we make sense of the spiritual seasons of our lives is by observing the seasons of nature, right? God frequently used illustrations from creation to explain his kingdom. I am the vine, you are the branches. Faith like a mustard seed. You are the salt, you are the light of the world, right? He uses creation to teach us about the ways of the kingdom. In the same way, I believe that God has a lot to teach us about the seasons of life that we face through the seasons that we see in creative order. Winter, spring, summer, and fall all have something to teach us about the kind of seasons that God leads us into. So today, we're beginning a 4-part collection of teachings exploring the spiritual seasons of winter, spring, summer, and fall. And the hope is that throughout this collection, you'll be able to determine what kind of season God has put you in right now so that your expectations, your posture, and your response move with God instead of against God. Y'all ready for that? By the way, just by show of hands, whose favorite season is fall? Yeah, okay. What about winter? Fatai, are you the only, you two are the only ones? All right. Winter is coming. Spring. Summer. Well, it's pretty even. Summer seems to win. Summer's over, though, so y'all about to be really sad. Is summer technically over? It's not over yet. Summertime sadness. So today we're going to begin our collection by exploring the spiritual season of winter in honor of Fatai and Natasha, baby. Oh, let's go. What is winter? Winter is a season in the cold. It's an unproductive, unfruitful time in your life. Or it feels unproductive and unfruitful. It feels like you're cut off from the world. Feels like you're rejected, you're sidelined and blocked from progress. It's like everyone else in your life seems to be progressing except you. Everything they do seems to be working. Everything you do yields no fruit. It's a period when the soul is numb, devoid of passion. You feel little to no motivation or drive. You don't feel like investing in community. You don't feel like praying. You don't feel like working or creating or ideating. You feel spiritually dry, maybe even dead. You feel distant from God. You feel distant from others. It's hard to hear God's voice. It's hard to feel his nearness and his presence. It's a lonely season. You feel misunderstood by people. You feel like people don't understand what I'm going through. You feel alone. And just like in nature, how winter stops the natural flow of living, in the same way, the things that used to bring you joy or success no longer work in the wintertime. What used to come with ease now leaves you exhausted. Now, just to compile it as a list, these may be some signs that you're in a spiritual season of winter. Just a few examples, we could throw it up there as well. A frenetic season of work, ministry, or family life has come to a close, and you crave stillness and solitude. You feel distant from God and from others. You feel little to no motivation or drive. A task that used to bring you joy now just feels exhausting. What used to facilitate spiritual connection and growth doesn't seem to be working. You feel spiritually dry. You've experienced a significant loss. Maybe it's a loved one, a dream, a home, stability, health, and you are grieving. You feel depressed. All your efforts don't produce much fruit. You're waiting for something, and everything is hinging on that upcoming change. Have you ever experienced winter? Maybe some of you are in that place right now. Maybe winter comes as a result of an illness or a major life event like the death of a loved one or the birth of a child. When Zion, our firstborn, was firstborn 2 years ago, it was a dark winter for me. It was a hard, hard time. This second one, man, it's been great. It's like spring. Everything feels new. But Krista's definitely in winter right now. I mean, losing sleep and everything. Maybe winter comes from a personal humiliation or failure. Maybe something that happened at work or a personal failure in your life. Maybe it comes because you're in a period of transition and you feel stuck between two worlds, between San Francisco and the next city you're going to, between one job and the next job, between one relationship and the next relationship. Some winters creep up on us slowly, like the deterioration of a relationship, like the gradual increase of burden for caring for our aging parents, or the slow drip of lost confidence over time. Come on, anyone that's, you know, past 30, have you ever gone through a season where like, I'm losing all my confidence? I used to be so confident in my ability to do this in my 20s, but now it just feels like I'm losing that day by day. Some winters come slowly. They creep up on you. But some winters, they come like a cold snap, coming upon you quickly and unexpectedly, like discovering one day that your skills are considered obsolete, the company you work for has gone bankrupt, or the partner that you are in love with finds someone new. I think all of us have experienced, whether it's a slow onset or a quick coming, winter at some point in our lives. However winter arrives, it's always involuntary. We don't get to choose when it comes. It's almost always lonely, and it's almost always deeply painful. Yet, it's also inevitable. Everyone will experience a spiritual winter in their lives, as winter is part of the cycle of nature. It's also part of the cycle of human life. Winter is necessary. A season of dormancy is required for the growth and the fruitfulness of a plant. Now, Catherine May, who writes an amazing book about wintering, not a Christian book at all, but really profound, she has this to say about winter. Wintering brings about some of the most profound and insightful moments of our human experience, and wisdom resides in those who have wintered. In our relentlessly busy contemporary world, we're forever trying to defer the onset of winter. We don't ever dare to feel its full bite, and we don't dare to show the way that it ravages us. A sharp wintering sometimes would do us good. We must stop believing that these times in our life are somehow silly, a failure of nerve, a lack of willpower. We must stop trying to ignore them or dispose of them. They are real, and they are asking something of us. We must learn to invite the winter in. Without the winter season, fruitfulness is not possible. Winter forces us to rest so that we can eventually bear fruit. But you know, I find that so many of us, we resist winter, don't we? So many of us are incapable of stopping to rest. We run ourselves into the ground. We're overworked, overbusy, overtired, and we fight the coming of winter. We try to rush out of it when it arrives, or we try to avoid it altogether. But think about plants and animals. They don't fight the winter. They don't run from the winter. They don't pretend it's not happening and carrying on living the same lives they lived in the summertime. No, they prepare for winter and they adapt for the winter. We, on the other hand, we fight nature. We rebel against the rhythms and the cycles of God's creative order. Winter then comes for many of us as a gift of forced rest, a gift of forced dormancy from God, allowing us to be buried like a seed for one season so that eventually in the next season we can bear fruit and we can grow. But here's the other thing winter is. Winter, and we all hate this, is a pruning season. John 15:1-2, famous passage, words of Jesus. I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. In the wintertime, God prunes away the things in our lives that take much and give nothing in return. See, winter is not for adding things. Winter is not the season where you take up 15 new hobbies, where you make 15 new best friends, and you take on 50 new, I don't know, Pokemon. I don't know what I'm saying. But winter is not the time for adding. It's the time for cutting, for letting go of things, for cutting things out of your lives that aren't good. It's the best season to look closely at all the tangled branches of our lives, the travel, the work, the projects, the hobbies, even the relationships that have become burdens, trivial pursuits, or distractions. Come on, you've been through a season where you start decluttering your life and you realize there are some things that you've been holding on to that have become more of a burden than something that gives you life. Winter is the pruning season. The lists in our head of people and situations to worry about, the burdens of responsibility that aren't ours to carry. It's a time to honestly ask if the things that we are holding and carrying and taking on in our lives are actually bearing fruit or just sapping life away from us. And then, without apology, Maria Kondoing that mess to say, cut it to nothing, all that which gives us nothing. It's why the psalmist says in Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. Ruth Haley Barton, she says, Psalm 46:10 tells us there's a kind of knowing that comes in silence and not in words. But first, we must be still. The Hebrew word translated be still literally means let go of your grip. Winter is a time of letting go of our grip on the things that are sapping life from us, that are burdening us, letting go of all that gives us nothing. But here's the thing we have to understand. Pruning is painful. I've never been a tree, but I imagine if I was a tree, if I was getting my branches snipped, I feel like that would hurt, right? Just imagine Groot. He might be the closest thing we can empathize with. If Groot was here and we're just cutting branches off of him, I think it would actually hurt. Pruning is a painful, this is all theoretical, by the way. I cannot scientifically you know, validate this, but I feel like it would hurt. But I do know that in our lives, in the seasons of life that we go through, pruning seasons do hurt. It's hard. It feels like death. Betty Skinner, who writes a lot about this, she says, painful circumstances that seem so defeating and discouraging are most often sacred gifts holding the seeds of our healing if we will embrace them, persevere through them, and allow them to change us and wake us up to a whole new way of seeing. So often when we are hurting, we run from one thing to the next, frantically looking for a quick fix that will ease our searing pain and restore things to the way they used to be. However, God is not seeking restoration, but transformation. The more we submit to and participate in the mystery of this purifying work, the more we begin to experience a sense that everything, even our darkest pain, is held in divine love. Spiritual winters, they kill everything that you thought you were, everything you thought you believed, to make room for the new things that God wants to do in you. You know, the image I shared earlier at the end of worship of some of us were holding on to things. But I love the line of that Will Regan song, Climb. I will climb this mountain with my hands wide open. And, you know, when I used to think of those lyrics, I actually didn't quite understand. Like, it didn't make sense to me. How are you supposed to climb with your hands wide open? Like, are you climbing like this? But I think the metaphor that Will Regan is trying to share is that we're moving towards you, God, but we're doing so with hands wide open. We have let go of everything behind us so that we can make room for what's next. You know, Zion, I tell you all the time, he's in his terrible twos, so he's tantruming a lot. And, sometimes he'll want something. For example, he'll want a popsicle, but he's still holding his snacks. And because he's holding on, he's getting frustrated because he doesn't have any room to grab the popsicle because he has snacks in his hands. And I'm trying to tell him, Zion, let go of the snacks so you can have the popsicle. Let go of the dry caca so you could have a beautiful, yummy, delicious popsicle. But he won't do it. And I think many of us are like that. We're holding on to things that we feel are good. When God is saying, if you would let go of that, I have something even better for you. Wintering is the time where we let go. Be still and know that he is God. Let go of what we think God wants to do so that we can make room, have open hands as we climb towards him for the new thing that he wants to do. As unbearable as winter may seem, we know that winter eventually ends. And it often ends with the melting away of old ideologies and preconceptions, making way for a springtime filled with new and unexpected possibilities. We forget that Moses wintered 40 years before returning to lead his entire people out of slavery from Egypt. We forget that Jesus wintered before he started his 3-year ministry. He went into the desert for 40 days, fasting, being tempted by the devil. We forget that Paul wintered as he was blinded after his encounter with God before leading the most significant missions movement in all of human history. We have no idea what the winters that we're experiencing are paving for us in our lives. We have no idea what the winters that we go through will create or bear on the other side. Psalm 135, in the winter of the soul, the psalmist wrote, I wait for the Lord, my whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. Just like we can't avoid winter, we can't rush out of it either. All we can do is wait and endure. You know, we forget that we serve a God of seasons, not a God of seconds, right? We want God in a Thanos snap to take us from glory to glory, to take us out of the hard season into the next, to give us breakthrough just like that. And while he does do that sometimes, we actually see more frequently, more consistently, that lines up with his nature, a God who moves throughout seasons, who allows things to come in their right time. You know, we tend to imagine our lives as linear, but they're actually more cyclical. And they are linear in the sense that, yeah, we do get older. You know, we go from young, being a baby, to middle-aged like myself, to an old man. Right? We do go. Time is linear. But I think a better way to look at our lives and understand the rhythms and the cycles of our lives is to see it as cyclical, right? While we do gradually grow older, we pass through phases of good health and sickness. We pass through phases of optimism and seasons of doubt. We go through times where things are incredibly easy and times where things are impossibly hard. And we have to remember this one thing, that one day our present will actually be our past. And one day our future will be our present. We know that because it's happened before. And so we can trust that winter will come, but also that springtime will eventually come. That seasons will come in and out of our lives, and all we have to do is hold on. Mark Buchanan, he has this to say about the winter. In the winter of the heart, we experience a wide gap between what we know of God and what we taste and see of God. Our theology says one thing: God is loving, faithful, righteous, bestowing wonders. But our experience says another, that he's aloof, angry, capricious, dealing bruises. And we feel deeply alone. Even when we're with others, we're estranged from them. Sadness is a room we can't find the door out of. And worst of all, we feel the encroachment of death. Everything looks dead. We feel dead. Sometimes we wish we were dead. But Christ, the man for all season, meets us even here in the depth of our winter time. He waits with us. He prunes us. He breaks our self-dependency and deepens our God dependency. He brings us into a fresh encounter with the God who raises the dead. And always, the man for all seasons leads us out of winter. That's the promise that we can hold on to. Now, what do we do when we're in the winter? Some of you might be hearing this. You might be feeling like, I think I'm in winter, but this doesn't help me. You're just basically telling me I just have to suffer. No, there are things that we can do. There are postures we can take. Just like when I was in Chicago, I just needed to layer up. I just needed to stay indoors a little more and not die outside and freeze, right? There are postures we can take. There are things that we can do in our winter seasons that'll help us continue to lean on God. And there's four things that I want to highlight. The first is this: Sabbath. Right, Sabbath is remembering and resting in the goodness of God. And I always tell my team, man, I need to preach on Sabbath like 12 times a year, because after 4 years, someone will finally try Sabbath once. And I think that's true in our church. Even, you know, we've talked about Sabbath so many times. And I know a lot of us, we don't do it still. But it's so powerful. And I think especially in winter seasons, we need to learn how to Sabbath. Sabbath is remembering and resting in the goodness of God. Right, winter is a time to stop and rest, cut back on doing, and learn how to be. But although it may be hard to see the goodness of God in the present moment in our winters, when we spend time remembering how good he's been, all of a sudden God comes into our present and he fills it with his presence. So the first thing is Sabbath. The second thing is solitude. During winter, rather than fighting our feeling of disconnection, we actually have to learn how to be alone. We have to take long walks, take breaks from social media and technology and the noise of our lives, pick up solitary hobbies that bring us joy, take moments or days or weeks to be by ourselves, to get away and learn to be present with God. The third thing, silence. Winter is a time for wordless prayers. It's a time to be still. It's a time to quiet the noise and to listen for God's still small voice. And last thing, simplicity. Simplicity is a spiritual discipline. Winter is the time to simplify our lives. You may have collected more stuff from the past seasons than you really need. Every time you move, you know it's true. Like, how do I have so much stuff? Winter is the time where we say, I have all this stuff from past seasons, and a lot of it I don't need to hold on to anymore. Physical stuff, scheduled stuff, emotional stuff, relational stuff. Winter is a time for pruning. It's a time to simplify, to take stock of all that you've accumulated and let go of what won't help you grow. So I want to leave you with this question. Are you in a spiritual winter? Are you in a season where you feel disconnected from God, where what you know about God and what you experience with God are so far disconnected, where there's a huge gap between your head and your heart, where it feels like everything you're doing is producing no fruit, where the things that used to bring you joy and life and success and growth just aren't working anymore? If that's you, the word I want to encourage you with is spring is coming. Winters do not last forever. And I believe for some of us, that's the encouragement we need to hear today. That just like we can expect spring to come in April, We can expect that spring is coming, that new life is being birthed. And here's the thing that I feel like God wants to encourage those who are in winter with. The thing that God is doing in the season that seems dead, that seems painful, excruciatingly painful, that seems lifeless, is actually paving a way for the thing that God wants to birth in the springtime. The pain that you're going through, the waiting that you're suffering through, the hopelessness, the death that seems to be all around you, all of it is like a seed buried in the ground. And you can't see what God's doing. But I want you to know that He is growing something. He is birthing something from your tears, from your pain, from your suffering, from your winter. And in the springtime, you'll get to enjoy and experience the beauty of the thing that's been buried in this season.